When you did Bones, did you have a thought at that point that you would be doing the Oddbits?
No, I don't think so, because Bones was the first one, so it's that one-off, you know, your first cookbook, and you don't know if it's going to be any good or if anyone's going to be interested. But I remember going to New York, where my editor was, and she did have a little party in her apartment for me and had some people there. And, of course, everyone said, what are you going to do next? And I said, well, Bones, Skin, and Fat. You know, that just seemed to me like, you know, it was one of those throwaway remarks. Well, I did Fat. And in the Fat book, there's quite a bit of skin, and I was really thinking skin isn't a book, right? You know, unless it's a totally different book. With so after I did Fat, and it just seemed absolutely obvious to me that Oddbits was the next place to go. Just you know, I hadn't really thought but I really wanted to do a book to rehabilitate awful and to make it not scary and to make people realize that it could be really tasty and to forget all the weird things that they'd eaten that would be really awful, like when my mother cooked. And I wanted to make it more inclusive, so that's why I called it Oddbits. So to show people like lamb shank, which probably 15 years ago was considered odd, is now pretty run-of-the-mill. Pork belly, 5 years ago, didn't come out of Chinatown. Now it's on every restaurant menu, right? And people are actually cooking with it at home. So it's like you can, you know, I'm hoping that in 5 years' time I can, you know, put the book out again and call it Normal Bits.
Well, and as the trilogy developed, these bits did start to become a bit more popular, at least on the restaurant scene.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, people have always said to me, oh, you're such a trend picker. And I'm not a trend picker. I just do things that interest me, and I've been kind of lucky in that respect. But yes, I think what's interesting for these Oddbits is like young chefs, you know, 30-something, I meet them, and they've really never seen them. They've probably seen calves, liver, and sweetbreads, but they haven't seen it. And for them, it's like really new and exciting. And if they're opening their own restaurant, it's not that expensive, a lot of them, so they can experiment with them. And they're all like so keen to try them and do things, you know. It's really fascinating because one of them told me, oh, you know, I was at this thing and they had brought out a pig's bladder. It was filled with all this mixture. You know, it was so like, wow, that was so... And I said, well, you know, that's a classic French way of cooking poulet de bresse, is to put it in a pig's bladder, right? It looks like a giant balloon. It's like en papillote to an extreme. And I said, you know, it's not new. You know, it's all been done before. It's just not many people have a sense of history anymore in food, right?
But also we've kind of lost that. You're right about how we just accept most meats as being in a package,
yeah,
in, you know, a cellophane wrap in the butcher's count. Well, butcher does.
Yeah, well, it's not. Yeah. It's a supermarket, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And nobody really wants to know that it came from an animal, right? So I wanted to put it together in the sense that, you know, I've got a lot of cookbooks at home, but, you know, some of them have got just like, you know, prepared brain or a pressed sweet bread. And because at that time, everybody knew what that meant, right? So it's kind of selfish. All my books are selfish. I'm really writing them for myself to put all the information down in one place so I can easily get it. And I thought, what I really need to do is tell people about these parts, what they look like, how to shop for them, and what else they can do with them. Like, you know, just start them off down the path. And then once they realize they're really easy to cook, they'll be able to just put them into any recipe they already have, right?
But we don't see them in the supermarket where a lot of people still do their shopping. So, you know, where do we go to find these things?
Well, I want everyone to go to a butcher store. I think we need to bring butchers back. I think supermarkets have done us a great disservice. You know, if you're buying, should you really buy meat and toilet paper in the same place? It doesn't make any sense to me. And there's no one there. You know, there might be a guy behind the counter, but he's not a butcher. So there's no one there to give you information. There's no one there to discuss something with. If you go into a butcher store and you want a certain cut and he doesn't have it, he can tell you another cut that can be cooked in the same way. He can exchange information, help you, perhaps even give you a recipe. So we've lost that way of giving information, communicating, and just, you know, like letting the traditions carry on, because it's just been stopped. No one knows how to do it anymore. And once you lose the savoir-faire, you know, you're really in a bad spot.
Yeah, and it does take a while to get it back.
Yes, I think, and then you might lose it totally, too. That would be the worst.
Well, we were walking through Chinatown here. We did go into one butcher shop, and we did see lots of Oddbits there.
Yes, you see, that's what's interesting, because it's really the Anglo-Saxons that, you know, turned against them in a way. But still in ethnic cuisines, they're very, very popular, and they do use them. And it's interesting when you think about it. Think about all the ethnic cookbooks you have, and think how many recipes for Oddbits are in there. pretty much none, right? Because somebody in New York, an editor, has said, oh, no one's going to cook that. No one's going to like that. But it's wrong. You know, when people are introduced again, like last night I was serving tongue, and, you know, people have had bad memories of that as kids. They loved it, you know, with a salsa verde sauce or hot grilled tongue. Fabulous piece of meat that costs nothing. You know, it's ridiculous that we're not cooking with them more.
But you do have to get people over that kind of squeamishness that they perceive they have, even though they may never have tried it before.
Yeah, that's true. And that squeamishness is between the ears, right? It's in their head. It's not on their palate. And it's also because they're unfamiliar. And I, you know, if it's back there, if it's in the butcher's store, if it's even, I mean, there's no reason why tongue can't be in the supermarket. People saw it all the time. It would just become like an everyday thing, right? It's like, here we are in Chinatown. There's lots of people from Asian heritage here. Doesn't seem strange to us. But if we live in a small town where there's only, you know, people from England, someone from Asia would look odd. It's the same thing with odd bits, right? We just need to put them back in the market, into our recipes, into our lives, into food magazines, so that, you know, they're not unfamiliar and weird anymore. They're just regular, everyday food.
Now, is there a danger in something becoming repopularized and suddenly, you know, something that should be very affordable becomes less than affordable?
Well, I guess you could argue oxtail that's happened to, right? Because oxtail is, it's one odd bit that is quite popular and has become very expensive. But I look in Europe, you know, I look in the Paris market I'm familiar with where there's a lot of odd bits and they're still cheap, but they're still very popular there. So I think there's a big supply out there. There's a lot of animals being killed and not everyone's going to eat them. So I think the price will go up a little bit, but I don't think it'll go out of the...
Well, and that all does speak to, you know, we spend a lot of money raising an animal. Why wouldn't you use all of it?
Exactly. I mean, that's a quote I have in the book from Fergus Henderson saying, you know, if you're going to knock an animal on the head, it's only polite to eat all of it. But it's kind of like a moral question as well, right? Because if you do raise animals and you raise humanely and pasture-fed and all those things that we want in our animals, why are you throwing away the heart? Why are you not cooking the tongue? That's immoral, right?
So where to next? You've done the big three, so to speak.
Yeah, that's what everybody wants to know. Yeah. And so I tell them I'm going to do 101 ways to cook tofu. And some people actually believe me. That's what makes me surprised. I don't know. I have a couple of ideas, but I think I want to rest because it takes a long time for me to write a book, 3 years from beginning to the actual publishing date. And... I have a couple of ideas that nobody likes, so if nobody likes them, then I know they're good, because nobody liked the other ideas either.
they'll like them eventually.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, yeah. And I think what I admire about your books is that they are not just a collection of recipes. They've got the trivia and the lore and the reason behind why they are recipes that you should make.
Yeah, because that's what's interesting. You know, there's a lot of cookbooks out there, and we really probably don't need another one. So it's nice to have something to read as well, and some information. And the history and that kind of stuff fascinates me, so I figure it should fascinate someone else as well.
Very good. Thanks very much.
Thank you.